Hey guys, what is going on? Welcome to episode one of the Reborn podcast. I am so excited that this is actually happening, and I'm really honored that you're along for the ride. I've been saying I was going to do this for 5 years. Honestly, it's a little bit embarrassing to admit that, but it's the truth. For 5 years, I've been saying I was going to do this. I've created content. I've deleted content. I've been making excuses, procrastinating, and ultimately have done nothing. So here I am. Today's the day. We're going live with this thing. So let me start by introducing myself. If you don't know me, my name is Jeremy Simmons. I'm a healthcare entrepreneur. I'm a former pastor. I'm a husband, father of five kids. That's right. Five kids. There is never a dull moment in our household. So from the outside looking in, my life probably looks pretty normal, but my story is actually anything but. So why am I calling it Reborn? Well, this is actually my second attempt at this thing that we called adulting. My first run at adult life crashed and burned in epic, dramatic fashion between 2013 and 2016. Over the course of those 3 years, I literally lost everything. And as painful as that season was, the death that I experienced and the resulting rebirth were literally the best things that ever happened to me. So I am founding Reborn as a platform to tell the stories of resilient people who have navigated loss, rebuilt their lives, and discovered the kindness and faithfulness of God along the way. The most episodes are going to be interview style, but I wanted to begin today by just sharing some of my own story. So let's rewind to the early 2000s. And even as I say that, it's kind of shocking to me that I was an adult in the early 2000s. Like, how is that possible? But I was in my early 20s. Let's call early 20s me Jeremy 1.0. Today I'm probably Jeremy 7.0, and we still are trying to work out a lot of the kinks. I'm a work in progress, but we're going to go back to Jeremy 1.0, who was an even bigger work in progress. I'm an Enneagram 7. And if you're not familiar with the Enneagram, we are called the enthusiast. So we as sevens want to know and experience everyone and everything to the utmost extent. We're curious, we're energetic, and we have a really hard time focusing and sitting still. So if you had asked me in my early 20s what my adult life would look like, I would have answered as a very unhealthy Enneagram 7. I would have told you confidently that I would build multiple businesses and probably be retired by the age of 30. In the meantime, I would definitely travel the world. Somewhere in there, I would find the capacity to fall in love, get married, make a few babies, and I'd probably write a book. I also wanted to go back to grad school. I'd probably found a nonprofit or two in there too, just to have some meaning in my life. Also was a mediocre musician who aspired to maybe write some music, put it out there into the world. And I also had several adventure sport hobbies that I was passionate about that I definitely needed to master before I got into my early 30s. I literally believe with all of my heart that I could accomplish all of that in my first decade of adult living. Massive dreams, unrealistic expectations, all along with a healthy dose of entitlement. So when 30 actually hit, life was good, but it was not the grandiose one that I dreamed up as a younger man. I had a wife that I adored, two beautiful baby girls, and I was working my way up in the family business. We lived in a great neighborhood on a quiet street in a comfortable house, and we literally had a white picket fence in the front yard. We weren't rich by any means, but we were in love and we were hustling hard to build a life for our young family. I loved hard, I worked hard, and I hoped hard. But before you give me too much credit, I also hid and I avoided and I distracted and I enabled. And ultimately, it all collapsed, all of it, and my soul along with it. Starting in March of 2013, over the course of 3.5 really bizarre and painful years, my entire world fell apart. There were a series of events that I'll describe more in detail later, but I'll tell you this, they would rival the most dramatic Lifetime original movie that you have ever seen. Just to give you a few highlights and a taste, it involved false accusations of every kind imaginable, crooked private investigators, one of whom is now in prison. I'm not joking. Multiple trips to jail, expert witnesses, countless court appearances, and ultimately an 11-day divorce trial. Y'all, I lost my marriage, my kids, my career, my reputation, and ultimately my dignity. I think about the old Roadrunner, cartoons. You guys remember that? And there would be these scenes where Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote would get into a fight. And ultimately, there'd be this big dust ball, this big dust cloud. And you'd see Roadrunner's head pop up and a hand come out and punch him in the face and then go back into the chaos. And then Wile E. Coyote's leg would pop out and the Roadrunner would grab it and pull him back down into the chaos. And it would continue and continue and continue on until eventually Roadrunner would exit the dust cloud. Yet the fight is still going on and it's just Wile E. Coyote. Well, that's kind of how I felt. So I felt like I was in this fight and it was me and my ex-wife and the people that were supporting her. And there's God and then there's the devil and there's lawyers and there's witnesses and private eyes. And all I know is I'm getting the living daylights beaten out of me. And I don't know if it's me that just hit me, if it's my ex-wife that just hit me. Was it the lawyer? Was it God? Was it the devil? Are all of these things not even real? And it's just me by myself in a dust cloud creating my own mess. I didn't know up from down. All I knew is I was dying. When all was said and done, it was as if somebody had hit the master reset button on my life. And when the dust settled, it was just me and my two little girls. I had no plan, very little money, and ultimately no clue who I was or where I was going. Now, your story may not be as dramatic as mine, and I really hope that it's not. But similar to me, I am sure that you started out with some sort of vision for how your life would look. And if you have spent any number of years attempting to build that life, I guarantee you that you've already experienced your own struggles, disappointments, and unexpected setbacks, right? So maybe you look at your finances and you say, hey, I thought I'd be further along or more secure at this point in my life. Maybe you believe that your career would be more fulfilling than it actually is. And at the end of every workday, you come home drained, exhausted, feeling like you have no purpose. Maybe you look in the mirror and you see a body that you do not recognize. And you think, I knew that life would get a little bit busy as an adult, but I never thought I would let myself go this far. What am I going to do? Maybe you're burned out in your marriage and the spouse that you chose has evolved into someone very different from the person you first married. Maybe you feel like you're failing as a parent and you started out confident thinking you had all the answers and you had a good plan and your kids are really struggling and you don't know what to do. And this one might be the hardest of all. And I promise you, I meet people weekly who are in this position. Maybe you made it. Maybe you married the girl, the guy. Maybe you got the career and crushed it. And you've got the house and the kids and the cars and the vacations. And you have built everything you dreamed of. And yet you're still miserable. No matter who's listening or watching right now, I guarantee that you fit into one of those categories. There's some part of your life that is very different from how you originally anticipated it would be. So I've got good news and bad news. The bad news is that where you currently are is where you have to start. But the good news is that it's not where you have to stay. So let me say that one more time. Wherever you currently are is where you have to start. But hear me, it's not where you have to stay. So please don't waste unnecessary time or energy mourning where you are. Because like it or not, that's your reality. This is your starting point. But instead, invest that time and energy into moving forward. You know, when I was a teenager, my dad said to me at some point, and it really stuck. He said, you know, you can't steer a ship that isn't moving. So you got to move. You got to create some momentum. Even if the momentum isn't in the perfect direction or right on point to where you want to be, create some momentum. And from there, you can begin to shift your vector to get you in line with where you want to go. So here is how I want to help you today. If you are in a place where you say there are multiple areas of my life where I feel stuck or where I know something has to change. So what do I practically need to do to start creating some momentum in a better direction? Okay, today I want to share with you 3 steps you can take. I'm going to go into each one of them briefly. In the coming weeks, I want to spend some time going more in depth on each of the 3, okay? The first shift that I want you to take is I want you to begin surrendering control. That's right, surrendering control. Confession, I have massive control issues. Not sleeping with the enemy kind of control issues, but I do have my own subtle way of hustling and hedging to be sure that everything plays out exactly according to my will and design. Right? And let me just tell you, that's where for me, losing everything was such a gift. Life spun so chaotically out of control that I finally had to break and surrender. I didn't have the answer. I didn't have a plan. I didn't even have a prayer left. I literally remember one night, I'm 32 years old. I'm living with my parents. There's nothing more humbling than moving back into your childhood bedroom while your life is falling apart, right? So I'm a grown man and I'm going to bed in my childhood bedroom and I got on the floor and on my knees just to pray because I felt like I had to do something. And y'all, I was out of money. I was out of hope. I didn't have a plan. I didn't know what was going to happen next. But I thought the least I can do is be spiritual and pray, right? And so I get on my face and I'm trying so hard. And it's just nothing can come out of me. Nothing can come out of me. And I'm telling you, I don't know what you guys believe, what your faith is, and that's okay. But I'm going to tell you what happened to me. I'm on my face and I felt the presence of God enter my high school bedroom. And I felt him wrap his arms around me. And y'all, I collapsed into the fetal position on my side. And before I could get a prayer out, I heard him whisper over me, "Oh, son, I love you so much. Son, I love you so much. Son, I love you so much." And I wept and I wept. And that was the day I gave up control. That was the day that I came to the end of my rope and I knew there was nothing more I could contribute to how this thing was going to turn out. But at some point, I had to completely surrender control. My marriage was ending and there was nothing I could do about it. False accusations were flying around and there was nothing I could do to prevent it. My mugshot was being emailed from friend to friend to friend and I couldn't stop it. Eventually, I just had to let go. And let me tell you, there was this incredible freedom on the other side of surrendering that control. So listen, I don't know if you're familiar with the 12 steps. I'm not a part of a 12-step program, but I keep encountering it in the books that I'm reading and the podcasts that I listen to. And listen to me, the material is so unbelievably powerful. And whether you like the 12 steps or not, what you can't refute is the millions of lives it has changed. And the first of the 12 steps says, we admitted that we were powerless and that our lives had become unimaginable. So let me tell you, whether you're trying to get free of addiction or you're trying to get through a divorce or you're navigating the loss of a business or being separated relationally from a child, the very first step you have to take is to admit that you are powerless. And listen, what's beautiful about this is we don't stay there. So some people get nervous, say, well, why would you tell me that I'm powerless? I want to believe that I'm powerful. What I'm telling you is that when we finally admit that we're powerless, the Bible tells us that his power, God's power, is made perfect in our weakness. No matter how good your plan is, no matter how well you execute your strategy, you are human. You're going to leave a massive gap. And if you will engage a power, a life force, an entity, a God that is much bigger, much wiser, and much more powerful than you, I promise you will begin to supernaturally experience him fill the gaps. And then here's what's so exciting. Your story becomes a miracle story. It's not a story of how smart you were or how hard you worked to resolve a situation. Your story becomes a miraculous one. And the miraculous stories are the stories that we tell over and over again. And our kids repeat them and our grandkids repeat them. I do want to give you this disclaimer. Surrendering control doesn't mean to stop putting in effort. It doesn't mean to stop working toward a resolution or stop working on your personal growth. It doesn't mean be a doormat to your abuser. It doesn't mean continuing to enable the person in your life who refuses to change. Your actions may not change at all, but I'm encouraging you that the energy driving those actions might need to shift. So if the energy driving your actions is a need to control every factor toward the outcome that you've predetermined is the best one, that's got to change. So while you're continuing to work on yourself and address your situation, I want you to shift your internal energy to one that says, hey, look, I don't have the perfect plan. I've got to surrender. So I have a plan. I have actions I know I can take, but I'm going to hold that plan and I'm going to hold those actions with open hands. And I'm also going to hold the outcome with open hands. And I'm going to believe that a God who is much bigger than me, much wiser than me, and more loving than I can ever imagine is going to write the story the way it needs to be written. And in that, you're going to find peace and you're going to find an energy to keep taking the next step each day that you didn't know existed. This is my story. So the first shift is surrendering control. The second shift I'm going to ask you to make is to begin discovering gratitude. Now listen, gratitude is a buzzword. I get it. Everyone's talking about it. It's on every podcast. It's in every self-help book. And let me just tell you this right now. I am so happy that it is because it is so powerful. It is so important. I can't talk about it enough. And let me tell you, discovering gratitude has absolutely changed my life. So if we're going to talk about gratitude, we've got to talk about entitlement. You'll understand why in just a second. Entitlement is eating some of you guys alive. You may say, entitled? Me? Absolutely not. Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever had a thought, something like this? Hey, I thought my life was going to be like this, but it turned out it's not. And now I'm annoyed. Hey, I gave him or her everything and then they burned me. I deserve better. Or maybe the internal narrative is, I served God so well, gave him everything I had, and now look at how my life has turned out. This isn't fair. Unmet expectations that are rooted in entitlement always result in bitterness. All right, I'm going to say that one more time because I want you to hear it. Unmet expectations that are rooted in entitlement always result in bitterness. So if you find that you have some bitterness in your heart, in your life, I would wager that there is a root of entitlement somewhere deep down inside of you. And bitterness, according to the Bible, rots the bones. It's horrible for us. It decays at the core of who we are, not just the core of who we are, but the integrity, the strength, the skeletal structure of who we are. Bitterness is cancer to our bones. So here is the good news, is gratitude is kryptonite to bitterness. They cannot coexist. So let me give you an example in my life from marriage. Okay, so I've been married twice, which should make me an expert, maybe. So whether that makes me a failure that's trying again to succeed or like double the expert because I've done this twice, I can share the contrast of my approach as a husband in my first marriage and what I've learned moving into my second marriage. So in my first marriage, I was very idealistic. I had a very clear picture of what I thought marriage should look like, of what her role would be, what my role would be, how we would interact, and just As any of you who've been married any number of years can confirm, it never works out the way that you plan or expect, right? You end up with these unwritten, unspoken contracts that, well, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z for you, and I expect you to do A, B, and C for me. And then when she doesn't do A, B, or C for me, then I'm going to withhold X, Y, and Z because, hey, we have an agreement here. And you end up over time developing little roots of bitterness, sometimes over the silliest of things. But over time, those things compile. And before you know it, you can really end up resenting the person that you committed to spend the rest of your life with. And let me tell you, a lifetime of resentment is not one that I want to live. So I knew I had to figure this thing out. Not that I had figured it out fully, but again, the gift of losing everything in such dramatic fashion gave me great perspective as to how I wanted to start over again. And so when Lacey and I met each other and began dating, I was just so grateful that she existed. I was so grateful for the opportunity to love again, for the opportunity to receive love again. And y'all, post-divorce, if you've walked through it, you can relate. You just feel unlovable. The amount of rejection you experience is really hard to put into words or to help someone understand who hasn't walked through it. But you can end up feeling so devalued that you don't believe that you're worthy of love again, right? So when we met each other, we're just so grateful. You know, she loves me. I love her. We're going to attempt to build this life together. And let me just tell you, we don't sweat the small stuff. Work really hard to not let the small disappointments or failures create bitterness in our hearts toward the other. Let me give you a really practical example of how I handle this in marriage, but this can relate to your work life, to your spiritual life, but this is just how it plays out sometimes with me. So let's say something happens in our relationship that bugs me and I can't get it out of my head. I start kind of obsessively thinking about it and I can feel resentment kind of boiling up inside of me. My discipline is I go to my notepad. I've got this green notepad. Usually it's in front of me, but it's not here right now. I'd show it to you, but I've got this green notepad that I carry everywhere with me in the back. I will go down and I'll just start writing everything I'm grateful for in my bride. Lacey does this, and oh my God, she's this way, and she brings this to our family culture. She does this for me, and I never thought I'd have this way ever again. And as I list those things out, I can feel that resentment exiting my heart, and I realign my internal narrative with the truth, with the full weight of evidence of the gift that I've been given, and that small little offense begins to feel really, really ridiculous and obsolete. Now, that doesn't mean we don't address issues in our marriage. We both do that with each other. We all have to do that. But don't let the little offenses, the little disappointments rob you of the greater joy of building a life together. So the third shift that I want to encourage you to make is I want you to begin restoring identity. Now, hear me when I say this. Where you are isn't who you are. I'm going to say it again. Where you are isn't who you are. But who you believe you are will absolutely define the direction you go. Where you are isn't who you are. But who you believe you are will absolutely define the direction you go. Identity drives behavior. In my experience, identity drives behavior and not the other way around. So let me give you some examples. So let's say that you're the guy or the girl that I described earlier. You look in the mirror and you say, I'm 40 years old and I never thought I would let myself go this far and I don't know what to do. If you see yourself as a fat person attempting to get fit, I would wager that you're going to really struggle getting there. And even if you get there, you're not going to be able to sustain it. But if you can shift your identity to say, I'm a fit person. I'm an athletic person. I am a person that takes care of myself. Deep in my identity, I know that is who I am. I'm a person that takes care of my body that has temporarily let things slide. So I just got to get back to who I always was, who I deeply know myself to be. And I'm telling you, making great decisions about what you eat, making it in the gym on time, getting enough sleep. All those little disciplines become easier when it comes out of a place of identity, not out of a place of shame or obligation. So in your finances, don't view yourself as a poor person who's trying to get wealthy, or the moron who's made 1,000 mistakes financially, who's trying to get more discipline to chart a better course. If you can shift your mindset to where you deeply, truly believe that in you is a person who is good with money, who makes great decisions, who's a fantastic investment for an investor or an employer, who has unbelievable potential and will accomplish the dreams and the goals that they set in front of themselves. If you can see yourself that way, I promise you, your behavior will begin to follow suit. This is going to sound hokey, but there is something energetically that happens, that when you begin to see yourself that way, others will too. And I'm telling you, opportunities will flock to you that will increase your wealth. Guys, you can apply this to your relationship. Hey, I'm a good husband. I'm a loving husband. Maybe I completely dropped the ball this week, this month, or over the last decade, but deep down inside, I know that there's a great husband in me that can love his life well. And I want that guy to come forward. I want that guy to step up. Ladies, deep down, I'm a great wife. Deep down, I'm a great mother. Maybe you lost your mind on your kids today, but listen, come back, look in the mirror, stare yourself deep in the eyes and tell yourself, you are a great mom. Give yourself some grace for dropping the ball and show up the next day and give it your all. I promise you it will change everything. And I want to end with talking about faith. So listen, this podcast is not always going to be faith forward, but it is a significant part of my life. So it is going to be woven throughout most of the podcast. I feel like identity when it comes to faith and it comes to who we are as the children of God, I think has been really mishandled by a lot of the modern day church. You see, I grew up believing that I am a sinner who is saved by grace, who will always struggle with sin every day of his life until one day I die and I go to heaven, right? That's what I grew up believing. Even though many of you could quickly biblically support the statement I just made, there was something about the way that it was taught and the culture of the church that I was in where my obsessive thoughts every day were, don't sin, don't sin, don't sin, don't sin. I was terrified of making a mistake. I was terrified of letting God down. And there's a quote that what you resist persists. And I believe it so deeply. Paul talks about it in Romans. He says, the things that I don't want to do, I do do. And the things that I do want to do, I don't do. So the things that I'm stiff-arming over here continue to fight back even harder. And the things that I'm trying to run to seem to avoid me. This is the pattern of a life that is obsessed with the do's and don'ts. We always end up going back to the don'ts. The Bible also teaches us that the law, the list of do's and don'ts, incites rebellion. It literally triggers something. You tell a kid, don't run out in the street. All I can think about is running into the street. I tell a kid, hey, no dessert until after dinner. 5 minutes later, I look out of the corner of my eye and they're sneaking a cookie out of the pantry. So the way that I'm raising my kids, and the verdict's still out if it's working or not, but sin is not a big word in their vocabulary, but they know it. But we don't talk about it often, especially when it comes to their faith. I emphasize, do you guys realize that you have been washed clean, completely covered in Jesus's righteousness? You've been perfected in God's sight. The word literally says that he has removed your sin from you as far as the east is from the west. It also says that he drowned your sin, your mistakes, your failures, the gaps you leave every day. He has drowned them in the sea of forgetfulness and remembers them no more. So if he doesn't even remember my sin that he's forgiven, why am I still obsessing over it? And let me just tell you, I cannot emphasize how much I began to grow once I made this shift in my faith journey. My energy and my focus moved from my failures and my sins to just the wonder of the beautiful completed work of Jesus. Let's explore that mystery. I want to be obsessively thinking about what I stand to gain and inherit as a son of God, not the stakes, not the mistakes I made before I understood who I really was in Him. This is the moment where I wish I could reach through your screen or the speakers of your car, if you're listening, and just gently grab your shoulders and tell you, lean into this truth. Lean in to the magnitude of what Jesus has done. Don't give any unnecessary weight to your failure, your shortcomings. This will change everything. So in the coming weeks, we're going to dive deeper into these three shifts that we need to make. The first one, surrendering control. We're going to get in the cycle of shame, fear, and control. And as I describe it for you, I promise you're going to see its pattern in your life, and it's going to be a game changer for you. We're also going to talk about discovering gratitude, and I'm going to continue to give you some practical steps to how to foster more and more gratitude in your life until it just becomes second nature. And we're also going to talk more about restoring identity. And this is a big one, especially if you've gone through some significant trauma. I would tell you that you are perfectly positioned to begin rediscovering who you are, and maybe not who you were, but who you were always meant to be. So again, thank you guys for tuning in to episode one. There's more to come in the coming weeks. And in the meantime, remember, you are valued and you are loved.